All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blind Side Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and alongside of me is Mr. Joe DeCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back for another edition of Blind Side Blitz, and we are brought to you by, humbly, by Grumblings Media. That's grumblingsmedia.com. Head over there, check out. There's definitely a lot of articles. There's other shows. If you like our show, they got plenty of other variety of shows to check out, too, there. Go to grumblingsmedia.com. They got they got the basketball for you guys. They got all kinds of sports. They got entertainment, and they also do a little bit of political, a little bit. Go ahead and check it out if you're interested. But all you can also follow us anywhere you get your iTunes, your Spotify, you know, your Pandora. So make sure you check it out. Follow us and become part of the Blitz Nation.
All right, Joe. I guess all the news now that's captivating the NFL right now is that Justin Jefferson just signed his extension here, which now makes him the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL of all time.
Just the highest paid person.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's what it is. I like how they do the whole non-quarterback title. Like, hey, he's not a quarterback, but he makes more than everybody.
yeah, right. So there he is. Again, he's got the team captain here. He's got the extension now. Yeah. He's got the money. That makes a whole lot of sense. $89 million is fully guaranteed. Woo! At signing, and up to $110 million guaranteed. Averages out to about $35 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and we knew something like this was going to happen. It's Justin Jefferson. Now, for me, it's like the only difference here now this makes is because there's a lot of other wide receivers out there that really want to get paid now, and this makes it a little more difficult for some of these guys, or at least it resets the market. So where do you gauge some of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, this is the difficult part is, like, we talk about contracts all the time, and when you have a big name like Justin Jefferson, you're like, oh, well, what's going to happen right now? Because, you know, their quarterback moved on, and there was a lot of uncertainty in terms of, like, the offense, what the future looked like without Kirk Cousins. But, man, I mean, for them to, like, unload, like, basically just empty the bank account out. You know what I mean? They made the guy the highest paid player in the NFL, and we anticipated a high contract. We definitely anticipated him being paid the highest paid wide receiver, but man, to come out on top of the whole heap and just say, I'm the richest man in this motherfucker. I just made bank. And, wow, I can't believe the amount of money he got, and especially like the total guarantee. And I understand about resetting the market because he is seen as the best, or at least one of the best in this league. But on the other hand, it's like, man, you're really the future of this franchise. It's interesting because the reason why they can pull off a big contract like this is because of what they have in their quarterback room now. They're not paying Kirk Cousins the lopsided money that they were before. Now they got J.J. McCarthy under a rookie deal. They have Sam Darnold under a very, very low income deal, like a veteran, you know, league veteran minimum type of deal. So they can afford to kind of do a little bit of splash and lock up Justin Jefferson. But I just hope that they're thinking long term with that deal, depending on how it's constructed, like the final part of it. You know, to set themselves up for success later on down the road, maybe they're paying more bonus early on, or maybe there's a higher salary early on, and it kind of breaks down as they go, to kind of alleviate some of that cap space so that they can continue to add more talent.
Yeah. I mean, it's we knew this was going to happen again. The market's going to keep going and changing.
I didn't expect to be the highest paid overall.
I mean, again, I don't know. I wasn't surprised, but it's the trend. And like you said, they're getting more money for the salary cap keeps going up, and these guys are doing this. But now, like you said, it kind of they've got to kind of win now, because what's going to happen here if they do hit on McCarthy and stuff like that? You know, a couple of years down the road, he'll probably end up wanting his. So you got to have these guys in this nucleus here and be able to be friendly at the back end of this contract, like you said, to be able to kind of work some things out to keep you know, a winning franchise here together. But like you said, the quarterback room is very cheap. right now for them, and hopefully they can keep winning. But they have a lot of good players out there, too, on this team now. A lot of people probably forget that mm-hmm. they were very active in free agency and picked up a lot of different players here. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Vikings look this season.
The interesting thing that I'll say is that the reason why they could do it is because they have J.J. McCarthy under a rookie deal. He hasn't even stepped foot on the field yet.
Right, right.
They got 4 to 5 more years until they even have to worry about re-signing him if they choose to do so, or if he even pans out. Sam Darnold is different, though. Sam Darnold is a vet, and here's the crazy part. He's a 25-year-old vet. Like, he's still in the prime of his career, and some people think that he might have a legitimate shot to even start for the Minnesota Vikings for this upcoming season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's not too crazy to think that, because when you're bringing in a rookie, like, listen, he's got to learn a lot. A lot is going to be thrown onto JJ's plate, and we're not sure if he can digest it all. But for Sam Darnold's been there, done that. He has talent. He's shown flashes.
Mm-hmm.
And reports out of camp is that he's – pretty much like a whole new man in terms of quarterback, and the Viking staff mm-hmm. really do enjoy what they are able to see on the football field as of right now. We'll get to see his fans when preseason games start to kick off in August, and then we'll be able to kind of make our own kind of claim on him. But for now, very cheap quarterback room. That's the reason why they can do this kind of a deal, this mega, super mega deal for Justin Jefferson. And, I think the Vikings definitely didn't want him to go, and it also showed me a little bit of desperation. And I know some people might not be surprised with the being paid, like the highest paid overall player, but to me that kind of seems to be a little bit of a desperate move, because it shows me that, well, they wanted to make him the highest paid wide receiver, but then Justin Jefferson was like, no, I want to be really paid. Like, I want exclamation points sent out, like, to the whole league.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of – maybe that – don't know for sure that's how it happened, but it seems awfully weird. Like, definitely could have been the – definitely should have been the highest paid wide receiver, but highest paid overall to me is like a little bit of a reach for me.
Right, right. And we've talked about this, too. And we've talked about, you know, these players and making what they're going to make, and, you know, their brands and things like that, and breaking the bank every single time. And we'll see what happens, you know, with the franchise as it moves on. But like I said, he's very talented. And without him, they're really nothing. We saw that when he was injured, you know, a bit. When he wasn't there, they had issues. So I mean, what a game changer he is when he's on the field. Another big move that happened this past week, too, as well, just a few days ago, is Christian McCaffrey now got his 2-year extension worth over $19 million per year now. So now he is set to earn 62, for running backs now, set to earn $62.2 million over the next 4 years, Joe. And what's funny about McCaffrey, I think, is that, again, one, if he was stuck in limbo in Carolina, what would this, you know, amount in his career kind of end up to? You know, it's kind of tough when you're stuck in those types of franchises and not able to, you know, really, you know, be, you know, when you have to do everything, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden the behind line's not very good, so you can't really get a whole lot done. Then the injuries he was having early on. So, I mean, his career, I think, at one point when he was in Carolina, was on the ropes. And the fact that he was able to get traded to the 49ers, I think, was a blessing. And look what it had turned into. And now he's turned this into, you know, a lucrative career and get that extension to see what really he has been. But like I said, when you're drafted by a terrible franchise and their lack of drafting and helping you out and the way that the culture is there, it could change your career completely. And the fact that he's gone to the 49ers with a lot of different weapons, a good coach, a good organization, John Lynch, and been able to extend his career like that, I think it's been astronomical for him.
I mean, I think that his time with Carolina was mostly plagued by injuries, but I wouldn't say like his career was in jeopardy of just not being very good. Like he was definitely flashed on the page, had some great seasons with Carolina with no offensive line. He was able to make plays out of thin air at Carolina. But a definitely decimated by injuries, which kind of held him back mm-hmm. in terms of being on the field long enough for Carolina to kind of reap the rewards there. So it sucks for those times, those seasons that he spent at Carolina, because most of the time he was injured, wasn't even on the football field, but when he was a huge difference maker. And for the Niners, like you said, when they acquired him, I wouldn't say revitalized his career, but I would just say that, like, they gave him a better option to go to a winning team, which actually, what's crazy to me is that the Niners were able to accommodate that kind of acquisition to be able to get a guy like Christian McCaffrey and kind of insert him into that lineup, which every position was pretty solid. Backs, though, were often injured in that organization, so it was almost like, well, we'll bring Christian McCaffrey along. We'll acquire him, and we'll try to do our best with our training staff to keep him healthy as possible. And we just think it's going to be amazing. And you can see the tremendous amount of production on the football field, obviously.
All right. We've got Mike Tackett's in the house with us tonight, Joe.
What's going on, Mike? Welcome to the show, bro.
All right. What has he got over there? He's got a comment.
He said, with the NIL and now conference profit sharing, we will see a drop-off underclassmen declaring for the NFL draft as a whole. Sure, first-round talent will still declare. This year, only 58 underclassmen declared, the lowest since 2011, when the NFL updated their CBA, restricting guaranteed money to draftees. I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, here's the thing is, like, I understand, like, the whole profit sharing and the NILs and all that. The only thing that I would say is I think that will be a drop off is from this draft. Like this past draft that we had, mm-hmm. we had COVID interrupt the drafting process. So a lot less players came out during that COVID year, and that kind of almost like the gates closed up for talents to pass through to the next side, to the NFL level during that COVID year. They're like, all agents were definitely telling their players, stay, if you can, stay back a year. And boom, the following year after COVID, everything opened up. And then all those players that have been waiting an extra season to come out, all the floodgates broke open, and you saw this tremendous talent pool that was this past draft. And I feel like, of course, it's going to drop off next year, because we're not going to probably see that happen again with that much talent coming out at every position. Like, I feel like that's going to be the issue. Is like, so now going forward, we might be let down a little bit, because now it might kind of go back to, like, normal, so to speak.
All right. We've got Back to the Stone Ages with us tonight.
Nice.
He's in the house.
What's going on?
He says, extending McCaffrey for $19 million per year just shows that the 49ers and the Eagles have the best salary cap nerds in the league. Book it.
I will say that you do a fantastic job of manipulating the cap, but when you're paying a running back who has injury history, $19 million a year, giving him that much money, to me, I don't think it's I don't think it's kudos for the organization, because, hey, they got this kind of a deal done. Because, listen, when you do a deal like this, you're making a decision, like we talked about in last episode's show, where you might be conflicted with, okay, you got Deebo Samuel, you got Brandon Ayuk, both want contracts. Next thing you know, you made a decision, we're going to lock up Christian McCaffrey and give him $19 million a year. That's nothing to kind of wave your finger out here. That's a big-time decision. Now, how does that affect Ayuk and Deebo staying there? Because reports out of San Fran right now is that Ayuk hasn't even shown up to mandatory OTAs. Now, he's making his stance. He wants a new deal. Debo's kind of like, well, I'm over it. Debo's taking the stance of, like, saying, I'm just going to play and let everything else handle itself. Where Ayuk is taking a different approach and just kind of putting his feet, stomping his feet down and saying, I ain't coming in until I get a new deal. And I want to be paid right. So now for the 49ers, shifting gears to lock down McCaffrey, giving him a lot of money in resetting that running back market, the highest paid running back. Now it seems like they've made the decision that they are going to move on from the kind of circus that is circling Brandon Ayuk. And I wonder what that's going to mean for the very near future. Does that mean that they are prepared to now trade him? Because now that they've signed mm-hmm. Juwan Jennings. Mm-hmm. I know it wasn't anything crazy. It was 2 years, $15 million. But then now you make a big statement and you sign McCaffrey to an extension, $19 million a year. Whew. I don't know. Like now maybe there's not enough money to lock up Ayuk. Maybe. Maybe Debo is also going to be left out, you know. So, yeah. When you make these kind of big swing decisions here, it changes the whole dynamic of what you're going to do in the future. So, I just wonder. This is definitely going to impact that because they've given a big contract to someone else, not even a wide receiver.
Right, right, and again, to extend them to make it now another 4 years. I mean, who knows? Again. Because you need to make room for those guys. You need to make room to keep that nucleus together, like John Lynch has tried to say, to do it. Because I think your window to hit again is closing because, again, Brock Purdy still needs to get paid, you know, at one point. You know what I'm saying? You're lucky to still have him on what he's on. So
true.
I think
true.
Once he hits, because, again, if he starts winning again and they're able to get to the Super Bowl again or even late in the playoffs again,
I mean come on.
That shows you, again, you know, just what having a good – franchise quarterback will do for you. I mean, and everybody wants to dog him for whatever. He's just, you know, good because, you know, the system and the weapons and blah, blah, blah. But how many other franchises out there need a quarterback that can at least do that and steer the ship? A lot of them don't, you know, so he's going to end up getting paid too, but you got to figure it out. And that goes to show or ask the question, like you said, is Debo finally going to be the next one to get paid? If it is, then Brandon Ayuk, you would think, has got to be out then.
Oh, I don't even know if they're going to be able to afford Debo now.
Right? I mean, it's nuts, you know.
Because to your point, mm-hmm. Brock Purdy is going to be due for a new deal. Mm-hmm. And he's been winning. Like, it's not like he's not a successful quarterback with this team. He's helped this team get to where they were mm-hmm. in the Super Bowl. He's helped this team win many games and right. some comeback from behind wins. So there's no question he's going to get the bag.
Yep.
That's no question. But now looking forward, you got other players on the defensive side of the ball that are going to be looking for new deals. You, mm-hmm. When all that kind of falls down on top of John Lynch in the front office, it's going to be like, you got some tough decisions to make, man. If you got one player that does not even want to be there, why fight it anymore? I understand mm-hmm. the talent's there, but why fight it? Move on, get whatever you can for in a trade, get whatever you can for him, and then let bygones be bygones, because also you drafted a high-end rookie wide receiver in Ricky Parasol mm-hmm. that could easily step in. And that's what it seems like he's going to be doing, is stepping in and starting this season. You're going to get a taste of what he can do for your team. So it's almost like they've already taken precautions to kind of make this a reality, to move on from Ayuk at least, let alone Debo.
All right, we've got Eric Powers from Restreams in the house with us on Facebook. He says, I was surprised Debo wasn't traded.
I'm not surprised Debo wasn't traded. I'm surprised that they stuck to their guns and held on to Ayuk. Because mm-hmm. that was the one that was like the most sought-after type of player from the Niners, a guy who's very young still and has a lot to offer another team, especially as a wide receiver. So I just felt like that would have been a more likely trade that they would have done. Because Debo, to be honest, is really important to their offense. More important, I would argue, than Ayuk. Even though Ayuk had a phenomenal year, don't get me wrong, but Debo kind of like that mismatch at wide receiver where the guy can literally be a running back for you. He can catch the ball. He's tough to tackle. He breaks tackles. You know what I mean? He's very, very physical of a wide receiver. So he does a few things differently. And I feel like fits the mold that Kyle Shanahan looks for in a wide receiver.
All right. We've got a few different comments here. We have Back to the Stone Age.
Nice.
He's with us again. Here he is. He says, Debo will be moved before the season starts. So he's thinking,
he's thinking
going to be traded before the season starts. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot until we get to the start of the season. And
we got a long way to go.
One of the biggest questions. Yeah,
we got absolutely. A long way to go.
Yeah. William DePilar is in the house with us tonight. He says, I don't know, $19 million. My question with McCaffrey in big games is whether he could actually put the team on his back come playoff time or big games. I don't know. I'm just asking.
He already does that, though. Like, we've seen it before where like, because in this running offense that he's literally taken over games before where people are all worried about the receivers and worried about the passing offense of the Niners and the option plays that they do. Like, they just hand the ball off to Christian McCaffrey, and he gets, like, two touches. That was one stat that was crazy last season, is that he literally almost averaged two rushing touchdowns a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that was over 120 every week in terms of rushing. So, like, it was really insane, his production. So I definitely think this is the guy – this is the type of guy that's already proven, obviously, that he can handle the heavy workload or even carry a team if he needed to. Mm-hmm. And the craziest thing is that he's never been healthier with the 49ers.
Right. And maybe William has in his you know, recent in his memory, the thing that had happened in the Super Bowl where he was playing well and then they kind of went away from him for some reason and they had to get back to it and he ended up fumbling late in that game, which kind of turned the game over back to the Chiefs. But, you know, you can't just say that.
Nobody's
you know,
perfect.
He can't put the game on his back because of a fumble like that. And I'm sure he's still kicking himself for all that there too. And it happens. I think as far as even with that game, it was just management by the team. But like you said, Joe, too, in the same breath, that paying a running back all that money, we just seen that the Giants didn't want to do it. So, you know, Eagles go and pay Saquon Barkley for what they can. Mm-hmm. A lot of teams have shown that they're not going to shell out money to a running back. But when Christian McCaffrey can do it in a passing game and, you know, the running game all together, good player, I mean, it's tough to pass.
I mean, my thing, too, is the reason why some of these running backs got big money this year is because – look at the teams that signed them. These are teams that are winning teams that are going to be competing for the Super Bowl to where they're like, we got to lock it down now. We got to pay our guy. We got to bring him in. Or even if it's a free agent that we think this is going to be change our offense to the next level to get us to where we want to go. Like, that's what you're seeing. And I understand the cap and everything. And a couple of those teams, like Stone Age mentioned, the Niners are one, the Eagles are another. They have phenomenal front offices and what they are able to accomplish, manipulating the cap and figuring out different ways to still bring in talent.
I think the Chiefs are
despite
another
even. There's a lot of them, actually. Mm-hmm. It's not just a select couple. Like, there actually is a lot of front offices that do a great job. So that's the name of the game. But when you're at that level, right, you're already at Super Bowl level and you're going for it every year here, you got to be able to make some of these moves where it's like, well, if we add just one guy and pay him well, that ends all our problems in terms of that position. So that's why you saw the Eagles said we lost out on a running back last year, and we're going to fill him in with another big name and productive player, but he has to stay healthy. So you're seeing the same kind of thing happen with the Niners. They hope that he stays healthy, and he did for the most part, and they reap the rewards there.
All right, Eric Bowers chimes in. He said the thing with Debo is that he has had history of injuries, and that's the thing with him and why they would just move on from him.
I mean, history, I don't see it. If you're talking about recent history where, like, he was out for a year and then for a couple years he was hampered with nagging injuries, yes, like really recent. But, like, overall his career, he's been pretty good dude, like pretty well put together and out there and, you know, playing for the Niners. So I think now
he was carrying most of the workload when they had him on running plays more, you know, kind of being that, you know, Swiss Army knife type of player, that's when the injuries are starting to pile a little bit because you get worn out. Because
they always used him like that. So, like, more than anything, it's because he's getting older now. His body's starting to break down, you know, and that's where you see the injuries kind of starting to pile up, too. So, I still think he's a really good player. Like, no question. And I think that's going to be something that John Lynch has to really think about in terms of, like, these receivers that are there waiting for a contract. Ayuk, Debo, who do you go with? Right now, like, relationship-wise, Ayuk doesn't even want to talk to the team. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you have no communication and you're not even negotiating a contract, it's almost like he's going to force your hand to just say, hey, all right, let's give up on it and move on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, we've got William Del Pilar in the house again. He also says here, Bobby goes, to add to that, his comment, he says, it's from a Roger Craig perspective. The man was a perfect beast in the West Coast offense, and I see McCaffrey has lights out, but not that at that level for that much money. I want Roger Craig.
I don't want Roger Craig because Roger Craig is in a wheelchair right now and can't really run. I mean, here's my thing about this. Like, when you try to compare an older player way back when to a new modern player, it's not – you can't compare it. You can't. They're from two different eras. Rules were different. The way they prepare is different because, honestly, if you're going to try to, like, put McCaffrey against, you know – any, you know, older football player and say, okay, well, this guy's better than Christian. Not athletically. Not – you got to think about the technology and everything that's so much more advanced now. What they're able to utilize to put into their bodies to get them to be better. The amount of the training that they have now is superb compared to what it used to be. So, like – you just can't compare them. It's too many differences there.
Right. And some players are just different too. So, I mean, it depends on, you know, what kind of offense it is too and how they play. I mean, Barry Sanders, spectacular player and stuff like that, but he still isn't like what Christian McCaffrey is. I mean, not saying that Christian McCaffrey is better. I'm just saying they're just different. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, nobody can be like
nobody
Barry.
Nobody can be like Barry. I mean, I get you there.
I mean, if you're going to say different. I'm getting Barry Sanders. Like,
Barry Sanders or you're getting Christian McCaffrey, who do you want?
If I'm getting Barry Sanders, a healthy Barry Sanders in his prime, same age, I'm taking Barry all day.
Yeah.
Barry Sanders literally could run without an O-line. Mm-hmm. Like, no help. Well, it didn't, almost,
because his big thing that helped him even was when he got into open space, you couldn't tackle him. So he was more dangerous there, whether you were with the offensive line or not.
It's,
you
know, not even that.
By it. I mean, when he got into open space, you just couldn't get him.
It's not even open space. You couldn't get him anywhere because he was so double jointed in his ankles. That's what set him apart. It was insane.
Yeah,
like there was guys literally surrounding him. There was like four or five players. I remember this highlight. They were surrounding him, and somehow he does this weird move and just hops backwards. They all come tripping over each other and just ends up running around him. Like, guy was absolutely phenomenal. It's uncanny what he was able to do.
Yeah, so, I mean, we discussed this too, and what happens with other players. Brandon Ayuk obviously isn't showing up to camp here. He's going to sit out as long as he can.
I don't know what the deal is with that too, is because when you talk about Ayuk sitting out right now that – he can get fined. Mm-hmm. It's going to be up to the Niners organization whether they want to do that or not.
Right.
But you already have an agitated player who doesn't want to come play for you, wants to move on, and you can't even talk to him or get his agent to talk about a new contract. So, like, really, like, what's the best way to handle this, to be honest with you? Like, if you already were thinking, like, all right, well, since we can't do a deal, let's get a deal done with McCaffrey. We gave him $19 million a year. Now that's less money that maybe we could put up for Ayuk. Mm-hmm. And he's already disgruntled. So, I mean, it's almost like you're kind of making the decisions to prepare to move on from Ayuk. It's just you don't want to admit it to yourself. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, maybe there's a chance. Maybe. Let's just hold off. We'll put him on the back burner. Maybe he'll come around, and as we get closer to training camp, we'll start talking, and we'll get a deal done. That's what I think they're hoping. They're hoping that eventually he kind of softens up on his stance.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, this is what we're – now that these deals have been done, now you're going to see some of these other deals come to a close, hopefully, or you get to see the showdown. You know, CeeDee Lamb not showing up to camp either.
Right after Justin.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and we talked about it last week. It's like – if I'm the Cowboys, I'm trying to make sure I get done because, you know, CeeDee Lamb, he's going to be trying to get highest paid now over Justin Jefferson. I don't think that's fair.
No.
But, you know, some people would disagree with me on that. But, and obviously CeeDee Lamb is going to disagree with that. So he wants to become now the newest highest paid probably player in the NFL or whatever. Which I think it's crazy.
Right.
But then if that happens, if that is the deal that does go down, what does that mean for Dak Prescott then again? Then you just paid another player besides your franchise quarterback, which you kind of got behind him. You told him that he's the guy, and you've done this before. He's the guy before, but then you went and paid Zeke, and you paid Lawrence, and then they got to you. Now you're at this stage again, and CeeDee Lamb, if you're going to take care of him first, and then it finally comes to you, he's the highest paid wide receiver, maybe player in the league, you know, non-quarterback or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do for you and down the Dak Prescott situation here? Dak has been playing it totally cool. CeeDee Lamb now sitting it out.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how that's going to play out for the Cowboys here and some of these other players that are just skipping the mandatory camps and kind of putting it out there. Because you even know about Micah Parsons here, too, wanting to get a refreshing deal, too, as well. So there are a lot of questions here for the Cowboys coming up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Eric Bowers says, fuck CeeDee Lamb. I can't stand any Cowboy wide receivers. A bunch of divas.
There's a lot of divas throughout the NFL.
Divas out there. Yeah, definitely a lot of divas. So, I mean, yeah, so that's one of the things here coming up in training camps getting going. I mean, it's going to be exciting here this summer. I can't wait. So, the topic of the show here this tonight here, last week we did the AFC. The whole conference, the biggest questions throughout all the divisions. This week, we're going to do the NFC now. We're just going to start right off here where we just talked about the Cowboys, Joe. For me, I think the biggest question here is, are you going to get the deal done before these are questions before the season starts. So during training camp. So for me, it's like, are you going to get the deal done with Dak Prescott before the season starts?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. Honestly, like, I think this is the type of thing where Jerry Jones he's almost hinted at the fact that we're not going to sign you to a deal right now. We want to see how the season plays out and how well we're able to execute and maybe potentially not only just make the playoffs, but how far can we go? Are we going to be one and done again? Then you might never see a contract negotiation, but again, then you got the other side of it is where they're thinking, well, he is a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. We've had him his whole career. Do we lock him up now? But do we want to pay that big price tag to keep him, $50 million a year? Because that's what's kind of being floated out there in terms of like the starting in negotiation. So I think it's a little rich, honestly. We talked about it numerous times about how what and it's not just him, it's a team game. We understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But if your quarterback can't help you get over that hump of round one in the playoffs, make the championship game, possibly get into the Super Bowl, and who knows what happens, then this whole time he's been there. They haven't made it to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been able to put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the team that Dak is on now and, you know, the last couple of seasons have been well put together to the point where, like, they're ready to win.
Yes.
But they just keep falling short. So, honestly, like, with Dak Prescott, I'm in agreeance with Jerry Jones if that's the mindset going forward. Like, hey, let's just wait it out. Let's play the season out, and then we can talk about it in the next offseason. I think that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. Like you said, with this team, they right now, the team that is that they've had the, you know, 12 wins or so the last couple seasons, you had your opportunity to win. This is your chance to win now with the team that you have. I mean, I talked about it a few different times about Brandon Cooks being that sneaky player for them. That's, it's like a little hidden gem. And it actually just came, I think there was an article on NFL.com about even the fact that, you know, he's like an underlooked player for that team. But the nucleus of wide receivers that they do have, like you said, talent all around the board, plus the defense, you've got to be able to win right now, you know, because now even now when we talk about the contracts, Mike McCarthy's job is possibly even on the line after all this is said and done. All the wins, but not the big win, you know?
Right. We're 12-4. You're fired.
You're fired. We've seen that. I know. It's kind of crazy, right?
It's to me, if I had a coach that would always get me 12-4, always getting the playoffs, like just keep letting it roll. Like eventually we should be able to do something.
But the crazy part
of it is that, you know, it's a what have you done for me lately league. And yeah, we've won a lot of games. But have we gotten even close to the Super Bowl? Have we sniffed it? Like, nothing? And so, like, maybe things need to be shaken up. We've seen teams do this before many a times. But the other thing, too, about Dak's situation is not just him. I got a feeling that the Cowboys front office is also thinking about the near future, is moving on from Dak, however way they do that. Cooper Rush, we talked about it before, that when he was asked to start for Dak, played better than Dak Prescott. And Cowboys fans were loving it. Mm-hmm. You know, he was winning games, he was executing. And so I don't think it's that far-fetched to think that Cooper Rush literally has a legitimate shot to earn a starting job for the Cowboys, because he's been there. He knows the offense like the back of his hand, like a veteran. And he's shown it on the football field when Dak went down with an injury. And, of course, you got to bring up Trey Lance, who traded to the Dallas Cowboys kind of as like a dark horse to potentially, if they groom him the right way and he fits their offensive scheme and works out and learns the playbook and chemistry with the receivers, that maybe down the road he could even have a shot at taking over for Dak Prescott. So I think as much as some people might be panicking about if the possibility of Dak moving on, I think you're in okay hands, like with Cooper Rush at least. Like Trey Lance, the jury's still out on Trey. Mm-hmm. We really don't know if he is even a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. Injury riddled, his first 3 years of the season, really hasn't seen the football field much, so it's kind of hard to just say, oh, he's definitely a bust. I don't think we've seen enough of him. So if the Cowboys would like to have a competition between Cooper and Trey, may the best man win. I know not a lot of fans will be hyped about that because of the players and what their recent success is, but I think it's a shot. I think it's literally something that they are really thinking long-term about.
All right. Eric Bauer says, Cowboys haven't been – to the Super Bowl since 1995 because JJ can't control his ego, needs to stay out of football decisions and actually get a GM.
Well, he is the GM, and he can do whatever he wants with his team.
He does what he wants to do.
Because he pays the bills, man. Right. He pays the players. Like, it's his team. So I understand what Eric is saying, though. Like, honestly, you would like to see a staff put together from a GM with a team president and so forth. So to have some, you know, security, to have some structure, and everybody can be held accountable that way. Instead of having your owner Jerry Jones has been around the football game and everything, but he's really a businessman. So it's not like he's a coach or a former football, you know, mind in terms of knowing the X's and O's and what have you. So I get what he's saying. Yeah, do I think that they'd be better fit with having a GM at, you know, in that chair and everything? Sure. But Jerry Jones, if you haven't noticed, is starting to kind of rein it back a little bit. You know, he's not really doing that many, you know, day-to-day operations used to, because he has his son now kind of starting to take over more and more. So, like, he's pretty much the GM at this point.
Yeah.
So, like, it's tough, too,
when you have a guy, especially like you said, ego and stuff like that, but he bought that team when they were terrible. And turned them into something. And now again, America's team, all stuff. Back South in America. the '70s, eighties, you know, they were shit. They sucked. Nobody wanted to admit they were a Cowboys fan at that point. So he turned that whole franchise around. And like I said, since then, even since 95, I think they've been winning, like, and having decent records. They haven't been shitty again like they were back then.
They've been competitive.
Like I said, now they are one of the biggest franchises in the world. You know what I'm saying? Again, worth and everything. He's turned them, like you said, to a pile of crap to something amazing that everybody loves. Like, again, America's team and all this other stuff. So to tell somebody that, you know, you should stop what you're doing and stuff like that when he's had the success of that, it's tough with somebody in that position where, again, they've shown the success. They're like, well, look what I've done. You can't tell me anything otherwise because you guys would be nothing with me without me. You know what I'm saying? I am the Cowboys, you know? So it's tough, though.
I get it for him.
So I think now we'll go to the New York Giants here, staying in the NFC East. And as far as biggest questions, you know, we're talking about questions before season starts again, because we can always get into that, you know, when the season starts to begin here. And that's obviously going to be, you know, the Daniel Jones thing. But I think the biggest question here for the Giants right now, before the season starts, the end of training camp, is Darren Waller going to be on the team? Is he going to retire or not? Because it's kind of lingering in limbo. I've heard about this 3 months ago that he was possibly going to retire and stuff, and then he's still on the roster, but then Jim. Friends are saying he's going to, he's not. So what the hell's going on here? They didn't go and get a tight end, so what are they doing?
Jim, Darren Waller's been contemplating retirement for 2 years. Okay?
I know, but don't just leave me hanging. Don't leave me waiting
here. Here you go. I'll alleviate your stress here. He's definitely retiring.
Yeah, that's 100%. What I thought, too, but why wait? Just
100% he's retiring. Like, listen, this guy's been injury-riddled late in his career. He almost gave up on football 2 times.
Mm-hmm.
So he's had a good career, like while he was healthy and was definitely a dynamic player, but maybe it's just time, because I don't even think he doesn't have that fire anymore. He doesn't like love, crave, want football. Like he just doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to practice. He's kind of like going through the motions, and he's more concentrated on making music than he is working on his craft in the off season. So just came out with a single, and I honestly listened to it, bro.
Can't be that good.
Listen, I listened to it. It is god awful.
Yeah,
like
most of them are. We should, you know what we should do sometime, Joe? We'll bring all the NFL players that have come out with solo albums or whatever. We'll go and get Cole Beasley's kit together, and we'll do maybe a top 10 list of, like, you know, the worst or some shit like that. We'll do the NFL hip hop playlist of these guys or something.
Do the top 10 worst. NFL music.
Yeah. Worst songs by NFL players or something like that.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. It's like Waller,
Eric Bauer says Waller is retiring. Yeah, which I think it too. But if we all think this is it, again, why the hell hasn't he just said something yet? And let's move on and let's do something about
because
it.
Because he's been busy with music.
Since then, we got Theo Johnson in the fourth, round here this year and stuff. We got Daniel Bellinger, but I think there was talent out there still that we could have kind of did something with. And, you know, I mean, I don't know.
I think they're comfortable with those guys. I think with the rookie and Theo Johnson and Bellinger, who they already know what he is. They already know that he has talent. And yes, he's been banged up here and there, and that's why he really hasn't been on the field a whole lot. But again, they have confidence in Bellinger. They have confidence in their draft pick in Theo Johnson, a guy that can also block very well. So I think that they're okay with it. And if Waller does, in fact, retire like we all expect him to do, it's going to be before training camp. We still got a lot of time, too. Like, I understand, like, he's been in contact with the Giants. They've had talks privately. So, but the meter's, you know, heading towards retirement. It's that simple. And I think that's what eventually is going to end up happening for sure.
You have a different question for the Giants. I mean, is it going to be their defense this time again? Like, because again, some new faces there.
You got a whole new regime.
New regime there in the defensive side. So.
New defensive play calling. We've got to wait and see how that all kind of comes together. Brian Burns being added, which is, I think, an excellent move.
That.
Excellent move. Because now, you know, as kind of lackluster Thibodeau has been.
Yeah.
This is going to help him. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Along with this Giants front that they already have assembled, but now you put a Brian Burns on the opposite end. Now teams are going to be like, whoa, wait a second. We can't double team over here. We got to worry about that guy over there. Well, what are we going to do? I think that's going to help them out as well in terms of pass rush. But my question, honestly, is not even defense because it's kind of an uncertain type of thing. We haven't even seen what their capability is. But I would say it's still offense. I would say, is it Daniel Jones's year to finally show out for Giants fans, for everybody, every naysayer that Daniel Jones is no good. He can't handle the NFL. He's washed up. Let get him out of here. Because the Giants made it pretty clear that they're ready to move on, but there's still something about it. Like they're like, okay, we're going to stick with Daniel Jones. He's our quarterback for this year. Yeah, they bring in other players to kind of compete for the job, but really it's going to be his job because he's getting paid. He's getting paid a lot of money. So this is his last ditch effort to show out and prove to everybody like, no, I am the starter for the Giants. I can handle this. I've just been waiting for weapons. Mm-hmm. And so with the addition of Malik Nabers from the draft, I think that's going to pay off huge dividends for Daniel Jones, for this offense, and a much improved offensive line. So they've made some veteran moves, you know, in terms of adding better personnel for the offensive side of the ball. And I just think that Daniel Jones is going to be playing better than he ever has because he just hasn't had talent around him. So now there's no excuses. Now it's like you got to show something. You got to be productive. You got to win some games with your teammates. So I think this has got to be the year. If it's not, then we all know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. As we all know that no question about it, they're done. We're going to wash their hands about this one.
Mm-hmm. All right. So next up, we've got the Philadelphia Eagles. For questions for me now, is this Eagles team and this defense going to take us a turn for the better now? Last year, they were ranked 30th in the league, 26th against for yardage. Just with the talent that they had, you would have thought that, you know, they could have did something better than this. They started off pretty good, but then again, towards the end of the season, it seemed like they were just getting scored on left and right, and the team had to try and compete and put a lot of in the shoulders of Jalen Hurts to, you know, put all of it on his shoulders. And it's kind of weird because at times I thought that they could have ran the ball a lot more, and they didn't, and they put it more on Hurts to kind of do something here. And it really made a difference when you look at those, you know, those fourth and shorts. How many of those that they made? Now, if they didn't make those and the tush-push wasn't working for them, where their season could have even been, because a lot of those were big decisions and big moments of some of those games where it could have went to the opposite side for them. So, for me, defense got to get better before the season starts.
I mean, you already seen the additions already. Like, they have definitely revamped. They brought back some players that they lost a year ago. And, like, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, I mean, that dude was amazing when he was with the Eagles. Now he returns. You know, you got all these guys getting healthier, too. Like, you got to think about that N'Kobe Dean. He wasn't healthy last year. They missed out on him. You know, his middle linebacker mentality. They had Devin White, who I think is a good, a great run stopper at linebacker, but maybe they can camouflage his coverage ability somehow. And I think it's definitely going to get better because not just about the talent they've added to this team and how, I mean, it's amazing. With Bryce Huff as a defensive end now for them starting there off the edge, tremendous. And then you look at the depth that they have beyond that, and you're teaming them up with Vic Fangio, a new D coordinator. He's an oldie but a goodie. And this dude knows how to coach defense. Everywhere this man has gone, he's had success. He went to the Dolphins, straightened them out. You know what I mean? He was with Denver, straightened them out. Mm-hmm. He has a long career in the NFL of being a guy who just fixes things on the defensive side of the ball. So Vic Fangio is the answer, not to mention the talent that they've been able to bring back and also add to this roster. I think they're going to be just fine.
All right, we've got a couple of comments. Sorry, I didn't get to you guys yet. I apologize for that, but we are going to throw them out there to you guys. William Del Pilar is going to say, don't forget Marty Schottenheimer. It was fired at 12-3 when we were talking about the Cowboys here. Fired at 12-3 and was the Chargers' high point. They let Breeze walk and traded for Rivers. Rivers was good, but they had Breeze. But still, like but I said, they, during listen, that – go ahead.
The reason why they got rid of Breeze is because of that shoulder injury that he suffered. Mm-hmm. They thought it was career ending. They didn't think that there was no chance he was going to be able to come back. That's why they moved on from him. And honestly, better safe than sorry, right? Like, I understand, like, you know – hindsight's 20/20, and we all seen Breeze what he did after the injury, came back from it, and was amazing for the Saints. But for the Chargers in this tough spot that they were put in, they're like, dude, I don't know. The team doctors were telling them, like, yeah, we don't think Drew's going to be able to come back. We don't even think he'll be able to throw again. And that's why that whole kind of thing happened. So.
Right, and I always bring up the fact, though, too, again, with Phillip Rivers, too, again, and that team and that franchise to where they were. Always gets put down against just because of the fact that they were still around in an era where you had Peyton Manning in that conference, you had Tom Brady in that conference, and you were facing those guys every postseason. It's tough to win. As you've seen how many teams, you know, have struggled to win against the Patriots, Tom Brady or Peyton Manning and things like that.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning switched to the NFC conference with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and took him to a Super Bowl, just like that. You know what I mean? And Drew Brees, happened to be around for that. I think that one season there. Wasn't able to get it done. But if he had to compete against those guys year after year and year after year, he could have been in the same boat, you know, with that Chargers, you know, team. And what kind of personnel would they have been able to draft even by that time, too, because you don't know how the draft's going to end up going.
Right.
So that's tough, you know, when you have that type of caliber of quarterbacks in that era competing in the same conference. It's tough, you know, to break the because you look how many times when it was they called a head to head with Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady. A lot of those times, Tom Brady got the upper hand over Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. And does that shadow even how much Peyton Manning is overall in the league and known, you know, as a Hall of Famer? No, but still, he didn't get to the Super Bowl very many times. And when he did, I think even some people were skeptical to say, all right, when he did win the Super Bowl, he won against. You know, the Bears, who weren't really expected to be there, rode that on the defense and only had Rex Grossman. And then they beat, you know, a bad Carolina team that wasn't seemed like they were not prepared when he was with the Broncos. So that was his two victories. And the one that he was in the other time was against Drew Brees and the Saints, to where I think Peyton Manning, they had him or they were in it. And then that halftime with that onside kick kind of changed the whole story of everything there. So. It's tough. Who knows to tell? It's fun to say, hey, what could have, should have, would have happened and stuff like that and where they made mistakes.
But, yeah.
You know, that's why we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got, back to the Stone Age when we talk about the Giants. He says, the Giants get a huge cap break if Waller, seems like he retired post June 1st. So I don't know. I have to look at that.
It'll definitely be after June 1st. So we're good there. We got clarity.
Yeah. So
we're fine.
Maybe they did get a cap break.
Wouldn't it be funny if the conversation was like, hey, Darren, really appreciate you. We know that you're thinking about retiring.
Well, it's after June 1st now, they're retiring.
But could you just, like, if you're going to retire, take more time and think about it till after June 1st.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then we'll just kind of make an announcement and be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, there is no dead money or cap savings here. So, I mean, I don't know. I think you're screwed either way.
Mean you don't save much anything.
Yeah, not much of anything. You're not guaranteed a salary, but you got, all right, for 2024, it would be dead money is $7 million, and then cap savings would be $6
million. So you don't save anything. You lose a million.
Yeah, you lose a million. So, yeah.
In a sense, yes.
And I can't tell before pre June 1st. Oh, that's pre June 1st. Let's see. Post.
You got to do post.
All right, so here it is. All right, so I guess he would. All right, dead money is $2 million, $2.5 million. Cap savings is $11 million. So $11.5 million. So you'll save. You yes, you will. You will save more posts. So maybe that's the plan, though. But what kind of conversation do you have with a guy, though? After that, you're like, hey, you're planning on retiring. Just make sure you do it.
That's right.
Afterwards. Yeah, and then he corrects me there where he says 11.2 million. That's why he did it. Yeah, I get it. I had to click the refresh or
Come on, Jim. You've got to be professional here.
My bad. Come on. I'm trying to do it on the fly. You
you're
know,
not supposed to admit fault either.
It's all good. All right, so we're in the NFC East right now, and that leaves the Washington Commanders.
Wait, I don't even get to ask a question.
Oh, did you? I thought you did.
No.
You didn't about the Eagles?
Nope.
Oh, wait, what was your question about the Eagles?
Who's going to stop them?
I'm sorry. Who's going to stop them before the season starts?
I'm going to tell you.
That's your question?
Honestly, because you look at this most well-put-together roster, honestly, when you look at this thing from head to tails, and you look at the depth beyond the starters too. So even when guys get nicked up and they need to like throw someone else in, they're pretty solid up and down every position. And along with the addition of Vic Fangio, to be honest with you, like that to me is going to be huge for the Eagles to kind of revamp that defense and get back to the way they used to play defense recently. So I love what they've been able to do. I love the pieces that they've grabbed. And I think this is going to be like probably the team to beat in the NFC East.
Yeah, I don't know, but we've seen it. We've seen the Packers beat them in the playoffs. So we saw the Cowboys beat them for the division.
But they didn't beat this team.
No, but we don't know. That's why I even said defense. You know, they got to get better. So then now they can get past that.
They are better.
The echelon. So you know, and make it. So next we got the Washington Commanders here. Yes, I don't know. What's the biggest question for me is maybe right off the bat, Jaden Daniels. Yeah, you know, is he going to be the guy, the difference maker for this team to turn him around? They've been looking for quarterback for so long and trying to get something here, and now they've got a new regime too. Dan Quinn right there, Cliff Kingsbury offense. So I'm interested to see what this team is going to be like this season. So a big difference for me, you know, I'm excited to see what's going to happen with these guys.
I mean, I don't think we can even question Jaden Daniels right now because he's a rookie coming in. I mean, you can't expect him to like take over the team and just bring him to the Super Bowl the first year or anything like that. This is a team that's still rebuilding. Like they've made a lot of additions. They made a lot of, you know, transactions and what have you. Right. The defense looks a little bit more solid. It looks well balanced, and under Dan Quinn, like the defense is gonna probably play better than they even, and not like they weren't that good. Like they had a good defense before this regime. So I just think with the players that Dan Quinn likes and that fits his scheme pretty well, that the defense is either just A, just not going to miss a beat, or B, they're just going to be even better. And that's kind of what I think is going to end up happening.
So do you think even maybe the question even could be, now I'm thinking about it, with the Jaden Daniels thing? Because we talked about some of these other rookies, and that maybe it's better that they start, you know, the franchise starts a veteran and then just brings the rookie in when they probably think that it's time. Do you think Jaden Daniels is going to be the starter day one here and maybe the first out of this rookie class to be the starter day one, or besides Caleb Williams?
Caleb already got that torch. But, yeah, there's no competition. There isn't.
Yeah, I know, because you're not going to put Marcus Mariota out there, right?
You're not going to – well, I don't think it's that you're not going to put him out there. I think it's that Jaden Daniels is going to flat out beat him in training camp. Mm-hmm. Like the only question that I have for rookies coming in, and it's very difficult. It's a very difficult transition to make when you're coming from college to the NFL. If you're a quarterback, the offensive language that you have to spew out in the huddle is freaking crazy. Have you ever heard like a legit play call in the huddle? It's insane. Mm-hmm. My head's spinning when I hear it, and I'm like, wait, what? So what does that mean? It almost sounds like it's a foreign language that you're just kind of spewing out, and everybody kind of gets on board and they're like, oh yeah, we get it. But like for him, he might not get it his first or second time around for any rookie. So like that's a big hurdle to get over. So like the language of the play calls, what every play call does, the protection, because you as a quarterback have so many things going on in your mind. Not only do you just call the play, but then when you line up, now you're trying to read the defense, what they're trying to do. And then you might have to call a protection to the offensive line, to the center, and be like, hey, Mike, linebacker, you know what I mean? And say, like, heavy on the right, you know, the terminology that they use to, like, send those signals across the board and then change the blocking scheme on the fly. Like, all of that. And he's got to make sure he's watching the play clock, that they don't run out of time and get a delay of game. Like, there's all these things that he has to think about and do and execute before the snap even takes place. So with all that being said, there's so much on these rookies coming in, and the game is so much faster anyway, that if he can just learn the playbook, it's going to alleviate a lot of that pressure, a lot of that stress. So that's pretty much the tipping point for rookie quarterbacks. You know, I think everything else kind of falls in line, but if they can get the terminology down, if they can get the play calls down, then most likely they should be able to beat out anybody if they're that talented.
All right, we've got Nick Pizarro's in the house.
What's up, Nick? Welcome to the show.
He says Caleb's going to be a bust. He says also, let's not forget that they go from playing other kids their age to playing some grown-ass men that have played the big league platform for years. Imagine being a 19-year-old kid trying to earn a team's respect as a rookie.
That's right. That's why you've got to carry my shoulder pads and helmets.
That is a tough thing for quarterbacks, to be in there and kind of gain the respect automatically of these guys that have been there for so long. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, when you have the – I understand it's because you haven't done anything lately in the NFL, but when you're a high-end pick, like the players know. Like, they're not going to give you the respect right away, but at the same time, they know, like, hey, we can't be as brash to, like, some of the other rookies that may be, like, middle-round picks, late-round picks. But this kid's supposed to be our guy. Like, he's supposed to be our savior. So we're going to give him a hard time, but we're not going to maybe give him as hard of a heart. You know, as much of a hard time with if you were picked later or even an undrafted free agent.
All right. So now let's move to the NFC North, and let's start off with, we're talking about Caleb Williams here, the Chicago Bears. I guess my question for the Bears is, you know, it's easy to say, I'm like, you know, will they compete for the division or whatnot? You know, the offense looks better. Will Caleb Williams have 4,000 yards? Blah, blah. But I'm looking at the team, and you've got a lot of great players. DJ Moore, Keenan Allen. I'm looking at Rome Odunze again, and like, how big of an impact is he going to have in this offense?
I don't think he's going to have as big of an impact as most people think because he's a high-end pick. That's what everyone kind of goes to. But, oh, my God, we got him at 9. He's going to be amazing.
Here he
don't
is.
Get me wrong. But talent is going to be amazing. But DJ Moore – has been the go-to guy. He's a veteran. You know, this is something that you know, Caleb's been looking forward to, DJ Moore's been looking forward to, and Keenan Allen as well.
Yeah.
Both vets, both guys that, like, I know for a fact Caleb Williams would love to throw the football to them.
Yeah.
But Rome Odunze, I feel like it's not going to be – he's not going to take over the league by storm by any means. He'll be good. But he's not going to have, like, the inflated numbers as maybe, like,
he's
a Marvin Harrison.
Set up with some of these guys.
To where, like, he's kind of like the only man in town, and they got to throw it to him because they have nobody else. So how many footballs can you throw around to all these different talented players? And not to mention, don't forget about Cole Kmet at tight end. Probably going to be Caleb's best friend, especially in year one. Guy that he's going to be able to get rid of the ball if he gets into trouble or what have you. So I think Rome Odunze is going to be a good player, and maybe he might be a phenomenal player like everyone expects him to be, maybe 2 or 3 years down the road when Keenan Allen moves on and so then he'll be the guy. He'll be the starter. So maybe not in year one, though.
Yeah. Do you have any different questions for the Bears here looking at them?
Nick says, I guess you're right. They kind of realize a future player when they come in. I can see that point. He goes, Nick also said he definitely has some weapons over there. For sure. So for the Bears here,
it's kind
honestly,
of funny.
It's because they made so many changes. It's almost like, honestly, here's the thing is we hear, you know, numerous times about how many, you know, positions that the Bears have upgraded and they made it better and they got their quarterback of the future now. They moved on from Justin Fields. But it seems like they always do this. It seems like they're just kind of recycling yet another quarterback. They picked them high because they were up there and moved on from Fields. And some Bears fans were pissed off about moving on from Fields. They liked him. They thought that he could develop into their starter. And then you got the naysayers and whatnot. So, I mean, honestly, like, I think that there's too much expectation for the Bears because Caleb Williams is there that I feel like a lot of people are going to be let down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, can the defense, yet again, my question, can the defense keep them in games long enough until Caleb Williams gets it figured out offensively to get some wins? And that's going to be the big thing. Is I know Nick mentioned early on that Caleb Williams is going to suck. He's going to be a bust.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I'm not high on Caleb. I'm one of those few guys that have spoken up before the draft, during the draft, and after the draft that Caleb Williams I'm not on board with. I don't think he's worth a first overall pick. I think he's very limited on what he's able to accomplish at the next level. Played at USC in a one-read offense. If nobody knows what that means, it means simply this. He looks at one receiver, and if he's covered, he tries to figure it out. That's why you see him running around the football field, you know, extending plays, sometimes taking off for yards, you know, running. And that's the problem, because now you're on the big show. Now you're in the game. This is the NFL. This is the top of the top. And you got crazy offensive verbiage that you're going to have to read out, you know, not read out, but you're going to have to tell your other players in the huddle. You got to do all these extra things as a quarterback at the next level. And, oh, yeah, guess what? You got to go through progressions. You got to read the defense. You got to execute. You can't screw up. Because when you screw up in the NFL, it's a turnover. It's a fumble. It's a stupid penalty. So that's where I think Caleb might struggle, because we also didn't see in college leadership skills.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that to me is like he's the biggest red flag and the biggest question of this whole team. And by doing that, can the defense make up for his you know, demise?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some questions here before the season starts here. And like you said, Chicago, they're another one of those franchises that, you know, it's a historic franchise, but really when you look it down all together, brass tacks, who is their best quarterback that they have drafted? Mm-hmm. And it was probably Jim McMahon, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even if people say now best quarterback they've had in recent years, you know, is it, then, you know, who is it then? You know what I'm saying? Because nobody really. They keep changing around, you know. So.
But doesn't that show you, too, like the history of the Bears and what they were, how they've been able to draft quarterbacks has been so porous compared to other teams that how can I understand people hype up Caleb, but if you're a football fan and you really know your shit, you should be like, well, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see.
Yeah, Nick brings up, he goes, Caleb really reminds me of RG3. Then he also says Cutler. Yeah, like I said, in recent years, Cutler, and again, that's a guy that they added, you know, picked up and drafted. Mm-hmm. It was on a trade with the Broncos. But, yeah, I mean, who knows? We'll see with the team. Either way, I think the way that the NFL is right now with the parity and the way it's been going down with some of the teams that made the playoffs last year and then some of the additions that some of these other teams have made, like the Bears, interesting. But you've got the Lions at the division who made the playoffs and went fairly far and almost to the Super Bowl. I mean, if it wasn't for that, you know, tipped interception that ended up Ayuk catching, it could be a different story. The Packers, who were there in the playoffs too as well, who, you know, surprised me a bit too. So, you know, and then Vikings. What's going to happen with the Vikings now here? So, I mean, that's going to be a tough division. So I'm excited to see the parity in that division and see what comes up out of it. Nick says, do we agree that this division is favored for the Lions?
This is a tough one.
I don't know, because honestly, the Packers, again, I like the way the Packers look, man. Like, if they do again what they did last year, I mean, that's tough.
Quick reaction, I would say yes. Like, if we're just going to get a quick answer, then yes. But there's some teams here, like the Packers, that they might have something to say. Like, this is a very young football team. Jordan Love kind of came into his own last year. We see him being able to handle the pressure, handle adversity, and execute.
Yeah.
So it's like they got this very young receiving core, all talented. Their offensive line is better and younger than last year. And you have Love. And then the defense. To me, honestly, like if you – I mean, I don't even want to jump ahead here for the Packers, but I'm just going to.
We might just have to.
Might
as well ride into it.
But, you know, the offense is good, right? But the defense, is the defense going to step up? Because by acquiring Josh Jacobs on the offensive side of the ball to be your running back, now there's no questions at all. Oh, yeah, and by the way, they drafted Marshawn Lloyd, who I absolutely love, and then they re-signed A.J. Dillon. That's a three-headed monster nobody wants to deal with on a snap-to-snap basis. But then you look at their defense. Rashawn Gary came into his own, is now like an edge rusher for the Packers, is tremendous for them, but also gets injured. You know, you got other guys like Preston Smith, who, again, is now kind of like a new addition to the team. He's going to be on the opposite of Rashawn, and that's an upgrade. But, again, I don't see the explosiveness in Preston anymore because now he's getting a little bit older, a little bit less quicker, a little bit slower in his takeoff. And now you've got some younger dudes now infiltrated into this defense. Adrian Cooper at middle linebacker, rookie. You know, Javon Bullard is penciled in to start at safety for them. So it's like, and Xavier McKinney was the kind of probably the biggest defensive addition that they made. But with all these changes, how's the chemistry going to be going forward? Are they going to all be able to mesh well? Are they all going to be able to execute and deliver? So I feel like for the Packers, the question is defense. And I'm a little skeptical. I got to admit, I'm a little skeptical because there's a lot of changes, and that doesn't necessarily spell success.
I hear you.
Especially the first year.
I hear you. I think they did even get a little bit better. And last year they were a top 10 defense here. So if they can, and I really like the Xavier McKinney signing for them. I think that was nice for that.
Of course.
And again, like he brought up the fact that what they did with the Cowboys, you know, winning 48 points up on that defense before winning 48-32. I mean, a big showing and almost taking down the San Francisco 49ers. Very impressive. So that's what I mean for me. They've got to kind of be near the front runners, but everybody loves the Detroit Lions because 12-5 record, their attitude, you know, I mean, their coach and what they have all behind them. Right. For me, I don't know if we're going to keep bouncing around or not.
Oh, go to the Lions. Go to the Lions.
It's the Lions. For me, the question is that defense has got to get better. Hurries like, you know, Dan Campbell says hurries are just almost as good as sacks and pressures or whatever. It's not. I mean, you can pressure a guy and make him make mistakes, but if you lock him down and get that sack or whatever, that is the difference between a change of a down or whatnot. And so many times we see, you know, Aiden Hutchinson in the backfield. And he's making pressure and he's getting there, but he's just not bringing them down. And like, and I think if he is able to bring him the quarterback down and get those sacks, it's just a big difference maker. And I think they need to get there.
Yeah. I mean, here's my thing is like, they've definitely helped out the secondary a ton. Signing Carlton Davis, coming over to start on the outside corner, drafting Terrion Arnold, probably one of the best, if not the best corner to come out in this past draft. They were able to get him because he slid for some odd reason. Like, people just kind of kept passing him up, and the Lions were able to get him. Much like Christian Gonzalez when the Patriots drafted him, as he just slid right to them. So, Terrion Arnold, great get for them in the draft. Carlton Davis, going to be a rock-solid vet on the opposite side. And then you look at Kirby Joseph in his, like, you know, I believe this is his third year at safety. And Brian Branch, tremendous draft pick, has locked it down. However, the only kind of problem that he's had is staying on the football field enough. Yeah. Now, he hasn't had anything crazy to, like, stay out for the whole year or anything like that, but these nagging injuries that keep creeping around and kind of, you know, disrupting him being not just the productive player that he is, but staying on the football field. that's the thing. Like, if Brian Branch can stay on this football field, this team is already way gonna, just on paper and on the football field, are gonna be way better than last year. So I don't have a question about their defense. I think they have been improving, and now they're even more solid than they were in this previous season.
Mm-hmm. And again, some people maybe still stay skeptical on Jared Goff, because again, he did get an extension earlier in the offseason. And people were still questioning about that, you know, like, yeah, he's all right, and they did whatever, but a lot of people still aren't sold on Jared Goff and stuff. So if he takes them to where they can get to the Super Bowl again, or even as far as they did last year, again, you got to kind of – how long does it go until those questions are finally answered for some people? You know what I mean? Like, we talk about Dak Prescott and some of these other people. There's always been that schism or that tag that's put on them.
The stigma.
The stigma that they cannot get off. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Jared Goff, for some reason, has been labeled as this guy. And what made it worse is the fact that he got traded to the Lions and Matthew Stafford swapped, you know, and went to the Rams, and the Rams win. I mean, so that only made it worse for that you know, line, for the, you know, for the stigma for you know, Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Because he had been there with the Lions or the Rams before and couldn't win the Super Bowl.
Nick Brazzaro said he goes, really like their tight end, Laporta.
Laporta, absolutely.
Definitely a great player, had a phenomenal year, his rookie year, and just continues to be a stud. A guy that was kind of undervalued in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, but now people are like wishing that they could do the draft over because Sam Laporta is such a talent.
Oh, yeah. And like you said, every quarterback loves a good tight end. And
absolutely.
There you go, buddy. Yeah, he definitely utilized that. All right. And then we talked about Justin Jefferson earlier here with his deal, but now let's talk about the Vikings as a whole now. So maybe the biggest question for me in the offseason before it gets started in camps is JJ going to start for this team, or are they going to ride it on, you know, Sam Darnold or one of the other guys they got here? Nick Mullins has an opportunity, but I think Sam Darnold maybe has got to be that veteran to be there. Unless JJ, again, we've heard about his smarts, grasping the plays, you know, things like that, reading the defenses. So I guess that's the biggest question for me going into the season before it starts and in camps. Is he going to win the starting job?
I mean, honestly, I think McCarthy is going to do very well with learning the playbook. He's already great at reading defenses. We've seen that about the stories about, you know, in the NFL war rooms about his interviews and what have you. But I don't think he'll have an issue with that part of it. The X's and O's and everything, he'll be fine. To be honest, I think Sam Darnold is going to give him a run for his money. Honestly, I think that this is kind of Sam's last opportunity to earn a starting job and holding on to it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to do everything in his power to do so. And maybe JJ won't be ready. You know, maybe JJ still not so much mentally, but mechanics or, you know, just accuracy issues. Because at times there were some inaccurate throws made in Michigan where it was like, yeah, he's got the arm, but sometimes the accuracy is just not there. And I feel like that still needs to be worked with him. So maybe if he's not up to par, the Vikings are okay with it because they have Darnold, and Darnold is playing much better. So I really do think that Sam Darnold might actually win this job because the Vikings aren't pressured into rushing JJ in. It's not like they're like, well, we don't have an answer. McCarthy's got to start, and let's see what we can do. They just gave Justin Jefferson the bag.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be like, well, JJ, you definitely have to start. You have to, all that pressure is on him. Plus you're throwing to a premier wide receiver in Justin. You don't want to disrupt that chemistry early on in his career to where maybe Jefferson doesn't want to play with this dude. So maybe protect him a little bit, maybe further develop him in his mechanics and his footwork, and just make sure he's ready to go when the time comes. It could be this year. Could be. Sam Darnold could get injured, you know, and then now JJ has to go in there. So, but I think the smart thing is don't rush it if you don't have to. And I don't think this is one of those things that the Vikings have to. I think Sam Darnold works well with this offense, in Kevin O'Connell's offense. And I feel like that's the reason why they brought him in. So I expect, I know it sounds crazy, I expect Sam Darnold to start, and JJ, if he has to, obviously bearing an injury or something like that, or just poor quarterback play again by Sam, then you might see him in there.
Hmm. All right, so now let's move on to the NFC South. All right, and let's cover the Atlanta Falcons here. So before, you know, season starts, you look at this team, I guess, and maybe the question for me is, how different is this offense going to look? Because you don't have Arthur Smith there anymore, so he was more like a kind of run first a little bit and whatnot, but they couldn't really find the quarterback to kind of get his offense going, so he's out. And you got Raheem Morris, who has been upgraded to head coach now, but he's a defensive side of the ball type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But you bring in Kirk Cousins. You got it. So he's got to be that field general for you with some of the weapons that he has now, too, when you got Rondale Moore and whatnot added to this team. So you've got some cool weapons here. It's not just Kyle Pitts by himself and then Drake London. So you still have Bijan Robinson, too. So, I mean, now you have a fully, like, a nice balanced offense where you can do whatever you want here. So how different is this offense, I guess, by season start? How is it going to look?
I mean, it's going to look tremendous compared to last year. I mean, you had Dustin Ritter, who some of us already knew that this guy wasn't going to pan out to be the starter. And Arthur Smith kept putting him in there and just keep putting him in there. And then you cost yourself your job. So now that you have a consummate professional, you have a veteran that has gotten it done before, and forget the naysayers that say, like, oh, well, he can't win the big games. He can't win night games. He proved that he proved you all wrong last year. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a great marriage for the Atlanta Falcons, and it's going to pay off huge dividends for them this year because the young talent that they have around Kirk, and it is, as long as they're creative enough, this is a team that could literally go from the laughing stock in that division to now being a prominent competitor to win the division. I mean, when you have these young players, Kyle Pitts, finally you got a quarterback, bro. Finally, mm-hmm. Let's see what you can do now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Drake London, that's going to make him better. It's going to make all these guys better. Bijan Robinson, now you can't stack the box against Atlanta because they literally have a real quarterback mm-hmm. that can slice and dice and throw dimes everywhere. So, I think that there's no question that the offense is going to be much better than it was the previous season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so next moving to the Carolina Panthers. Maybe the biggest question, Joe, is there, are we going to get season tickets to them? Because they're probably going to be like $50. Right?
I think it's $50 for all the games.
All the games, yeah.
They are the cheapest ticket in the league.
And they'll throw in the popcorn.
They just made the announcement that they're going to do like an $800 million renovations of the stadium.
Yeah.
Try to update it a little bit.
Update it a little bit.
But maybe is that an excuse to up the ticket prices now?
Right, yeah. Maybe. Why? We were going to do that now? Like, okay.
We can't be the cheapest ticket.
Mm-hmm. So I guess going into the season for me is, again, let's see, Bryce Young, can he bounce back from a poor season last year? I mean, not doing so well as where he was drafted for that type of player where he is in that position. You want him to kind of progress and do well. But we've looked at this team last year, and they didn't have any real weapons. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, Adam Thielen was their big add-on in the offseason. Like, whoa.
Old man Adam.
Blowing my mind.
Old man Adam.
You know, so they do get Leggett here in the draft. So they add that a little bit to him. And they got Deontay Johnson was as nice, too. So a little bit something here. But again, a guy in the running field back, a position that Joe had brought up too, Jonathan Brooks, which he really likes to do something here this season. That could mm-hmm. be a factor, and that would help out a quarterback too, 100%. As well, to kind of keep this offense balanced to where he's not taking so many hits and has to do a lot to where he was making a lot of those bonehead mistakes. You know, those turnovers are what really cost them last year. So for me, biggest question is Bryce Young going to turn it around?
No. That's it. No, he's not. And honestly, because I think I've seen enough from Bryce Young last year. I know it's like it was new. They're still trying to figure some things out, especially on that offensive line was atrocious. The protection was horrendous. I could not watch the Panthers play.
Yeah.
It was that bad. Like, I was just like, what am I watching? Nope, I got to change the channel. I can't do this anymore. But I don't – I honestly – I haven't seen enough from him because he made mistakes from the very beginning of the year and made the same mistakes at the end of the year where it's like when – I understand protection breaking down and you don't want to take the sack or whatever, so you do what you can to get outside the pocket and try to get rid of the football. But it just led to more interceptions. It led to fumbles. It led to negative plays. There was one play where I saw him scramble backwards for like 20 yards and then got sacked in the end. Like you can't do those type of things. So I didn't notice any kind of production as the season went from Bryce Young to give me confidence in saying, well, he'll definitely be better this year. And everyone else could be like, well, he didn't have all the weapons in place. Okay, you're correct about that. They were missing some players. Jonathan Mingo got hurt last year. He was a rookie last year, got hurt, really didn't play that much. But they managed to bring on Deontay Johnson. They managed to draft Xavier Leggett. So they added to that receiving core now to hopefully give Bryce Young a spark. But I still gotta say, like, I don't see anything to give me confidence that he's going to be the starter that they envisioned when they drafted him.
All right, so let's move on to the New Orleans Saints. And some of the stuff I'm hearing now coming out of camp here is maybe just going to trigger me to my question, I guess. For me, I would like to see the team kind of turn it around this season. That could be the question here for these guys. But from what I'm hearing out of camp, too, is what some people are talking about, Spencer Rattler. Do you think he has a real chance to start, you know, in this, you know, this season?
Hell no.
Yeah, because they're even
absolutely
talking
about
challenging
Come on.
Derek Carr for the starting
Come
position.
Come on, stop
which
it.
I think is ridiculous.
Stop
you know
it.
What I mean, I think it's crazy.
There's a ton of teams that would line up to sign Derek Carr if he became available or trade for him.
Yeah.
It's asinine to
maybe
even
just,
to even
it was
mention
from
that.
Dennis Allen's mouth, so maybe he's just
Just
talking
to mention
up,
it.
I don't know. Because
Dennis Allen knows that he's probably going to get fired this year.
Right.
honestly, Derek Carr is a very, very good quarterback. And when you give him pieces around him and everything, he can make things happen. Hell, he doesn't even have to have pieces. Proof is in the pudding. When he was with the Raiders, Hunter Renfrow was the only receiver on that team. And if you don't know who that is, he doesn't have a big name, but for 1 year, he was a Pro Bowler. And then that year, Derek Carr made him that Pro Bowler. And they made the playoffs with just having literally one receiver. And not even a very good offensive line. So I think Derek Carr can handle it. I think Derek Carr can get them where they want to go. And I just think I think this is just kind of hype for Spencer. Just for like the fans. Like that's probably an article or a statement that was made and people ran with it because it's like, oh wow, they struck gold on this one where Spencer Rattler could be a starter as soon as now. You know what I mean? Just to kind of get some hype going, but I just think that's absolutely crazy. There's no truth to that. There can't be. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. All right, so what do you think is the question here for the Saints then, I guess, coming into the season?
I mean, it's honestly because there was a lot of change. I have to say I have a question about the rookie that they just drafted, Talese Fuaga, who I absolutely loved as a right tackle, but they got him penciled as a left tackle. Can he lock it down for that left side? I'm not so sure. Because when you draft a player, now what's interesting is that the whole Ryan Ramczyk saga that was taking place where people thought he was going to retire, but he was on the ropes, he wasn't sure, and then all of a sudden they kind of gave him like this like little extension deal and was like, okay, well, I guess he's staying. And then they draft Talese Fuaga, and I'm like, made me scratch my head, and I'm like, where are you putting him then? Are you putting him at guard? Oh, no, they got, you know, Cesar Ruiz there. Okay. You're not putting him on the left side, are you? And sure enough, they got him penciled as a left tackle.
What?
I don't know if he's going to be able to make that transition because it is very difficult to do, especially when you've played on the right side your whole career. Mm-hmm. You played that. That was it.
Yeah.
So now you're just going to all of a sudden switch sides and go play. It's like writing with your left hand and then saying, oh, guess what? You're not allowed to use that hand. You can only write with right.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it. I broke my wrist, my left hand. Yep. I'm left-handed. I had to try to sign my name and print my name and do things with my right. Mm-hmm. I looked like I would have failed kindergarten. it was that bad. So I think this is kind of the same thing for Fuaga, is now he's going to be asked to do something he's never done before, and they're hoping that it will work out. I'm not so sure it will. So that's my big question.
What I found interesting here is on our lads, they even have Chase Young starting over Cameron Jordan on the defense. Do you think that's a realistic situation here? Because, again, when we've talked about Chase Young, it's one of those guys that kind of stands reserved and then finally puts out when he can. Like we saw a little bit last year, even with the 49ers. And yes, he's younger than Cameron Jordan and stuff, but Cameron Jordan's still one of those guys that's been productive still, despite his age and stuff.
He didn't pay too much,
you know. But yes, he is. I hear you there. But I mean, then truly now, is he getting paid too much to be a backup?
For sure.
That'd be ridiculous.
He's still going to be rotating in often. I feel like, because he can play anywhere on the D line. Mm-hmm. He can play D tackle. He can play the opposite side on the edge. So I think they're going to kind of – he'll be in a heavy rotation. They're definitely going to utilize his talents, but I don't think it's out of realm possibility just because – listen, Jim, we talked about this before about, like, when is Cameron Jordan going to be done? Mm-hmm. Because he's making so much money. He's not productive anymore. Well, he is productive, but he's not as productive as he was in his prime.
Yep.
So this is the transition right here. They saw an opportunity. They're like, we're going to bring Chase Young in. He'll be our starter. But it's under a prove-it deal. Remember that. So it's a one-year deal. He's got to prove to the Saints that he can stay healthy and stay on the football field and be productive. Because even when he went with the Niners, he didn't blow the scene up. You know, it's not like he had 15 sacks and Nick Bosa had 16, and it was, like, amazing. So I feel like it's going to be – it's a – let's see what you got left. Mm-hmm. Can you stay healthy? But Cameron Jordan, I do expect to be the starter. I don't really expect Chase Young to be. I know he's younger and everything, but I feel like this is going to be a heavy rotation for both players to where they're all going to get plenty of snaps. They're all going to be able to prove that they can still, you know, take care of business. But in the end, I think Cameron Jordan stays. But if Chase Young does, in fact, blow up in terms of productivity, in terms of just staying healthy and on the football field, that I think it writes itself. Cameron Jordan is going to be gone after this year, and Chase Young will be their new starter. They're going to lock him up for future years. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a heavy rotation, just to kind of give an answer. But I don't think it's a good or bad thing. I think it's just they're going to have to try to figure it out how to utilize them both.
All right, now moving to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Joe. For me, the question is, can the offense, you know, get better this season? Again, you've got some good weapons here, you know, for wide receivers. You know, Baker Mayfield, if he plays like he did last year, you know, that would help him out. But also, they barely edged through that, like, backdoored into taking the division, and they barely got it by, you know, a tiebreaker with the Saints. And the Saints were underwhelming too. So that division all together, it's got to get better. And it's going to be between, I think, the Saints and the Bucs. Unless the Atlanta does, that offense can really turn that around and then shock people in that. But there was at one time last year that Atlanta was lead in that division too.
I know, that was
so it's such a weird look altogether. So for Tampa, they had a top 10 ranked defense. I think they were seventh overall, you know, with that Todd Bowles. But they got to get the offense here together. I mean, like I said, it was nice to make that run and look good for Baker Mayfield to look like he's finally found a home here. Mm-hmm. But they've got to be able to do something in this division, especially for one, I think, for Todd Bowles to keep his job.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too, is you got to get better. Every year you got to get better. I'm not so sure signing Ben Bredesen is a way to get better.
I don't think so either.
But I did like the draft pick, Graham Barton, for them.
Yeah.
As long as he plays interior, which he is, it looks like he's penciled in as the center, the starting center there, and I think that's a good deal. But it's my only thing is, can they get better? Sure. Like, anybody can get better, but just don't be complacent and be the same as last year. Because we noticed Mike Evans last year had some drops that are uncharacteristic by him. Baker Mayfield had some missed throws. You know, he had a great year.
Yeah.
But sometimes the connection and the chemistry just wasn't there.
Right.
Chris Godwin was injured yet again, missed some time. So it's like, I know they've drafted, Jalen McMillan, who they really like, rookie out of Washington, who they expect him to kind of fill a role at some point. Definitely going to be in the rotation, but possibly a starter. But again, it's consistency. Everybody has to be on the same page. Mike Evans, can he improve, is my question. They locked him up for an extension. Now, can he, just because you got paid and you're towards the end of your career, that doesn't mean you can take it easy. You got to outperform everybody. That's what you got to do. So I think it's going to be an uphill battle, to be honest with you. Like, with the teams that have gotten better all throughout this division, what Tampa Bay experienced last year was an overachievement. But it was overachieving based on a terrible division. So now that everybody has gotten better, they've gotten better too, but everybody got so much better. So now it's going to be an uphill climb for them. I think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
At times, yep. For sure.
All right, now move on now finally to the NFC West. And let's look at the Arizona Cardinals. For me, biggest question for them now, their defense was putrid last year. Again, 31st ranked overall and just very bad. And that's why even Buda Baker's like, dude, get me the fuck out of here, dude. I don't want to be here, you know, all this stuff. They've had a lot of turnaround too, Joe. You know, so they tried to fix this here, especially with even the draft too, try and get some guys here and change it around. Offense, it is what it is. You had Kyler Murray that was injured for most of the season and things like that. Didn't have a whole lot of weapons. So now, again, you've got Marvin Harrison Jr. with Kyler Murray. Now, if he stays healthy, you can see the connection going there. And now this offense taking a turn for the better. It's just that defense, with the turnaround, it's like, can they get better for this season?
Yeah, the defense is interesting because they've made some good additions. Mm-hmm. They definitely kind of almost like an overhaul on that side of the football, along with their draft picks with Darius Robinson. I'm not a huge fan of him, but the way that it looks like they're going to utilize him is just to be a big physical edge guy who's going to be able to stuff the run and just not necessarily pass rush that much, even though some people are trying to say otherwise, like this guy can get around the corner. The guy's just a glorified lighter D tackle to me. But I think he's going to be able to make it difficult for tackles to be able to seal him in running plays. But they also added Max Melton, who I was very high on at corner. So, like, it looks like they made different acquisitions, even in free agency, to kind of fill holes to where they're hoping that it's going to turn around in big fashion. But, again, I still think it's a work in progress. So they might be better than 31. Maybe they'll be 30, and that's success because you're going in the right direction. But I think that they're just not ready yet to take that big leap. Buda Baker, definitely confident, and he's still there. This is the same guy that asked for a trade a couple years ago. Didn't seem like he was going to stay, and now he's still there.
Yeah.
So it can't be all that bad.
It can't be all that bad, right?
Free Gatorade at lunchtime.
Yeah.
Keep them.
So, that's a question, I guess, for me to see if they can make an improvement out there, because that would be, they never really had a shot last year with the injuries and the way that was. So, all right, next, moving to the San Francisco 49ers. Before the season starts again, what's their wide receiving core going to look like? That's like the biggest question here. What's their wide receiving core going to look like?
On.
That's got to be.
Really?
For me, yeah, because what's going to look like? Are they going to have everybody there? Or if they don't, who's getting traded and who's not? You know what I mean? Because the easy, an easy question is like, for the season, can they make it back to the Super Bowl, or can they win this time? Yeah, that's a good question too. Can it be? But for me, before the season starts, who's going to be there? Who's going to be the guys,
Honestly, it's not even that difficult of a question, to be honest. Like, one of those receivers are going to be moved on from. That's what I expect to happen, whether it be Debo or Brandon Ayuk. To me, it seems more like Ayuk. I know a lot of people out there are saying Debo because that was like the whole big rumor mill that was going on during the draft is Debo is going to get traded, not Ayuk. But if you got such dissension between a player and a front office that he's not even willing to even sit at the table with you and have a discussion, that to me is like the relationship's already broken. It's already done. And if you can't get back into contact with them, then you gotta cut your losses. So I fully expect Ayuk to be the one ousted. I think Debo will still be there. I think everybody else will be there, just not Ayuk.
Just not him. Okay. What are your questions for them? Anything else?
It's kind of funny when we got to ask big questions about a team that's so solid.
So solid, right? Isn't that kind of – it is the
– Actually,
you know,
no, here's the thing.
What do you got?
Will the D-line of the Niners be as productive as last year? I don't think so. They've lost a lot up front.
Yeah.
You know, Javon Hargrave is getting way older now. Like, he's I think he's going to be 33, maybe even 34 in terms of NFL years. Like that means, like, maybe you're starting to decline physically, you know, quickness-wise. Like, because I didn't notice a big impact from Hargrave like I expected last year. He had a good year, don't get me wrong, but, like, I thought he was going to be, like, what the years that he was with the Eagles. Like, he was just, like, amazing. You know, I didn't see that from him. I think he's starting to decline a little bit. And then you got, now instead of Chase Young there, opposite Nick Bosa, you got Leonard Floyd.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't think Leonard Floyd is that special of a pass rusher. Yeah. I really don't. Yeah. I think that he's good, not great, and he'll be okay. But in the running game, I think he struggles. I think he struggles to stop the run. So that's a weakness there. Malik Collins from coming over from Texans to fill in that other D-tackle spot. I'm sorry. I've seen him play before. To me, he's not that exciting of a D tackle. He doesn't really do much. It almost seems like the plays just come to him and for him to make a tackle. You know, it's not a whole lot of effort. It's not him making the plays. It happens to be there. but again, impact wise, you look at that D line. Besides Bosa, I think this defensive line is so completely transformed to a weaker version of what they used to have. So I think it's in terms of pass rush, I think teams are going to just key on Bosa and double team him every single snap. And then they're going to be able to single block these other guys. I think that's going to change the dynamic of this Niners defense that we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you got the pressure from the D line and then, oh yeah, by the way, they got ball hawks at linebacker. They got ball hawks at defensive back. And when you make a mistake, they're gonna get a turnover. But now, I don't think there's gonna be that crazy dynamic of a rush that's going to turn those plays into turnovers to help the secondary or the linebacker. So for me, I just think they gotten weaker on the D line, and I'm just not really excited to see it.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. You know, who knows? And it depends on, I guess, if they do make it again, how many holding calls will they call on the Chiefs?
Juwan Taylor, line up on the line, would you?
So, all right, let's move on to the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
And, again, they could use some, you know, to a turnaround here on the defensive side. But for me, again, because I am hearing some good stuff out of camp, though, too, do you think – with the way Geno Smith has been able to play, which is nice, and been a good leader and kind of turn around his career, though, but with now young Sam Howell there, do you think Sam Howell has an opportunity to win the starting job in this offseason here?
Possibility, yes, but probability, no. Because Geno's already ingrained in that offense. Like, I don't think that they are looking to move on from him. Now, if Sam Howell somehow... Wow, that's a mouthful. If he somehow lights it up in camp, you know what I mean? Where there's like maybe he even creates that quarterback competition where people are like, whoa, did you see the throws today by Sam? He was dotting it up, you know? And then Gino's like, well, screw you guys. Like, I'm the quarterback. Stop talking about him.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like if he can stir up some interest in training camp, then all bets are off. Where, like, now it might turn into a quarterback competition. I don't think it's meant to be. I honestly think Sam is insurance. And if Geno doesn't work out for future year, like next year or whatever, that they have confidence in Sam to develop him into their system and get him ready to start.
Right.
But I think initially right now, I think it'd be an uphill climb for him unless Geno, you know.
Again, goes back to old Geno.
Goes back to old Geno.
Yeah, but it could be, too, the fact just the new start and maybe better organization. Again, last year you look at the Washington Commanders and mm-hmm. not a very good offensive line at all. So he was sacked the most. I think he had 65 sacks last mm-hmm. year, and he led the league in pick sixes. And that's because pressures, mm-hmm. you don't constantly get hit. So you're in that offense, they kind of just threw it out there with him and be like, Sam, go do something with us, which is go here, go to try and make it just survive, buddy, go. And so then, you know, what was he to do? So again, trying to make Aaron throws, do something with nothing, even though he did have Terry McLaurin and some weapons, just it wasn't enough. He had no time. And just getting bashed. So a reset here with a good organization. Now Mike McDonald's offense could be a fresh new start. And again, what they said, they're liking what they're seeing. Players like what they're seeing, mm-hmm. and maybe he can just limit those turnovers.
Man, I gotta tell you, like looking at the defensive lineup, it kind of brings a grin to my face because this defense, on paper, anyways, looks amazing. Mike McDonald did a phenomenal job because he's coming over from the Ravens. So you expect them to have maybe not identical, but it will be mm-hmm. similar mm-hmm. in his own vision, mm-hmm. how the defense should be. It's going to be aggressive. It's going to be in your face, much like the Ravens, but with the pieces that he's been able to accumulate and now is going to get to play with on the field and put players in different positions and asking them to do things that fit them very well. Mm-hmm. I think Seattle fans are going to be pretty excited to see the defense week one and see what they're capable of, because very solid all the way through, defensive backs, linebackers, D-line. So it looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest question I would say for Seattle would be offensive line, because I know coming into the offseason is – will the offensive line play up to par finally? And you could look back last year, they were decimated by injuries. They really were. Abraham Lucas missed the whole season. Charles Cross, he had another big injury. He left. And then you look at the interior and they've been able to kind of piece some free agents together, like Lakin Tomlinson. They signed him this year to play guard on the opposite side. They got Anthony Bradford, getting his first start in the NFL. So maybe they've seen some things or seen enough from him that he could be their starter there. And then with Lucas and Cross coming back healthy, I think this is like the big deal. Like maybe that's the reason why Geno Smith didn't have a great year last year. Both his tackles weren't there, mm-hmm. where normally if they are, the protection is way better and he has a little bit more time. So I'm expecting, because of them getting healthier, because of the holes that they were able to fill this offseason, that it looks like this team is going to get right back into the race for the playoffs for sure.
All right. And finally, last but not least, with the NFC West, we have the Los Angeles Rams. Again, Rams made a good push last year. Again, they kind of surprised me and just kept winning and getting some big games in mm-hmm. and making the playoffs. You know, when it looked really bad for them early on, you're like, oh man, it's looking rough. Matthew Stafford banged up, but they were able to get done. Eighth ranked offense again, you know, where Sean McVay, again, I'm looking at this team and I'm thinking he's just going to walk away, but he came back and, you know, Aaron Donald moves on it now. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see what happens with this team. But maybe I guess the biggest question before the season starts, I guess. I don't know. It's like maybe are they going to split carries with Blake Corum, you know, and Kyren Williams, or who's going to be the main feature back here? Is it going to still be Kyren Williams here?
They split the backfield last year. Mm-hmm. Even though Kyren Williams was kind of like the feature back, was the guy that got the majority of the touches, they still mm-hmm. kind of like utilized their other running backs that they had. But I think with Blake Corum, I think because of the draft pick, because the reason why they brought him in is to utilize him more than what they were doing last year. So that they're going to definitely split carries 100%. And it's going to alleviate the wear and tear for Kyren Williams, because he came off of a nasty injury. Mm-hmm. And good player, really good player, like definitely got to get him the football. But again, maybe they just don't want to just beat the crap out of him until he can't walk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way to where they're going to be able to kind of like deviate or alleviate, I should say, mm-hmm. the amount of like wear and tear throughout the season.
Right, right. And maybe even another question would just be on their defensive side of the ball, Joe. What do you think?
Defensively, I mean, my only thing is now that Aaron Donald isn't mm-hmm. there, and I understand that's kind of pretty much like big, huge red flag. Everyone's going to react to it, I think, a little bit too much because they have some very talented players that were already in the pecking order mm-hmm. when Donald was there and now is going to finally get to start and show what they can really do. What was it? Kobe Turner.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe Turner was a really good player last year. Even playing in a rotational role, was able to get almost double-digit sacks as a D tackle. Pretty impressive. So, like, now that, you know, Aaron Donald's kind of passed off the torch, it's going to be this dude that's going to make up the difference. I'm not saying he's going to be a Hall of Fame or anything mm-hmm. right now, but I'm saying he is such a young, talented player and showed out last season that definitely is going to play up to par. But my thing is, the biggest question is the biggest change on the defensive line, are they going to be able to match the production from last season? Because you have two rookies on this mm-hmm, D-line
yeah,
now,
yeah.
and Braden Fisk and Jared Verse.
Mm-hmm.
Funny thing is, they're both from the same school, Florida
mm-hmm.
State.
Mm-hmm.
They both were highly sought-after defensive linemen, but they end up going to the same exact team.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. And they're great friends, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's like, hey, buddy, you're here, too. So now they're going to chase the quarterback together mm-hmm. and stuff the run together. So, I mean, but that's the thing is that the rookies coming in. Now, are there going to be immediate impacts? I think they're going to take their bumps and bruises at times, and they are going to have some miscues because they're rookies, but they're going to be coached very well in L.A. So I think that the defensive line in itself is going to take a little bit of a drop off. But I think as you get closer to the end of the season, you're going to really see the true impact of these younger guys. So initially, I don't think they're going to be as good, but then obviously as they get closer to the end of the season, and who knows where they're going to end up. Maybe they're division winners, maybe they're making the wild card, or maybe they just miss it. But I think this is a very good team that's well put together and young, especially Absolutely. On the D-line.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this division goes too, Joe. I mean, with any of those teams here, especially if Arizona can kind of turn something around here and get in the mix. So Seattle always surprises me too. So, I mean, it's going to be tough.
Right.
Very excited for this upcoming season. A lot of big questions about everything. I'm excited to see the new players hit the field and get going here.
Preseason and, games, man. Don't get rid of them, NFL.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I need to see the players.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right? That sucks so bad. Mike Tackett's with us here. He says, do you guys think we'll start to see a resurgence of the fullback position in the coming years? Nothing complements a great passing game like being able to put seven in the box, especially in the postseason.
Very true. I don't know, man. The way the NFL has all shifted and modernized their offenses, and now it's just a passing offense across the league. The days of fullback are dead right now. I don't know if we're going to see that come back unless you get some coaches that were coaching from that era. You know what I mean? Get them in, like, whether they be coordinators or maybe they do end up being a head coach. Like, Bill Belichick uses a fullback, right? So, like, let's just say if next year Bill lands a job as a head coach, you bet your ass he's going to have a fullback. Like, he's going to be the only one that does, pretty much. But teams typically don't use a fullback anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's not even a true fullback. Yeah. Like, he's like a lighter version of a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very athletic. So, with that athletic ability, he's able to go out for passing routes out of the backfield and maybe even take a handoff once in a while. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know, man. I think that where we're headed, I don't see the fullback coming back in a strong way.
Right.
I think you might see fullbacks being utilized here and there very maybe by a couple teams, three teams or something like that. But I don't see like fullbacks being a dominant presence like they once were.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's a dying breed. I think everybody should have a fullback in case you wanted to do that. Put seven in the box and let's say, hey, our guys versus your guys, we're coming right at you. Because like, that was the mentality then. So, but unfortunately, I don't think we'll see that anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, it's a dying breed. And who knows, if anything, maybe Jim Harbaugh or something. I don't know. But again, as those guys fade out, you are seeing it less and less, especially right. with how quick they want to see teams score these big scores like we saw in the playoffs here with the Cowboys and the and the Packers. You know, 40-something to 30-something. I mean, that's what they want, you know, out there. And that's what they're trying to promote. And the head-on collisions and stuff like that. So to have a fullback set up in front of the running back to set the block again with a little bit of a head of steam in that backfield before he gets there, I don't see them looking to, you know, promote that and do that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a great show, Joe.
Thanks, everybody.
Absolutely. Everybody, all the comments. We have a lot of different people out there from
a lot of
both
comments.
Different programs. And,
everybody
and
getting like that. Involved. So that's what this is all about. Get involved. Become part of the Blitz Nation. You can do that as easily as you head over to YouTube, go to Grumblings Media, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Also, you can follow us as well. And not just us. If you're interested in other shows like ours, we have sports, we have entertainment, we have political shows. Head over to grumblingsmedia.com and make sure you take a look and scroll through the website. They got articles, they got shows there, extra shows. Also, rumble.com if you wanted to check us out and Blindside Blitz. Mm-hmm. And you can take us on the go if you want, anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Pandora. Thank you guys for tuning in and hope to see you guys next Tuesday night.
All right. See you guys.